Welcome to the asylum. I love you, and if I ever get out of this, I'm so sorry for everything.
Enough, Jim. Dance for us, dance for us. Come on.
Welcome, the new boy.
Youngins Podcast. Previously on the Youngins Podcast.
Oh, what's going on? Get your head down, Davis.
There's a police car.
Are there any pulls up?
Right by you.
Oh, my God.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Is he tired?
How lovely, my dear.
I dreamt quite a lot about cows and bulls when I was a child.
Was this your first sexual experience? Is your first wet dream?
Cows and bulls again, Mother. Cows and bulls. I'm here. I'm that shepherd that you abused all those years ago.
Don't look now, but hang on. There's a bull behind you. Don't.
That's just something like a bull. You're not.
It's not a bull.
It's the Youngins Podcast. Coming up this week, James Fagan joins us on the phone to talk about the supergroup Melrose Quartet, who consist of James, Nancy Kerr, who is James's partner, both musically and conjugally, and Richard and Jess Arrowsmith. And we'll be hearing from James about the Melrose Quartet, also about how he met Nancy and his journey from medicine to music. Plus, he'll be talking about an unusual reoccurring dream that he used to have when he was younger. We've been talking about dreams quite a bit on the podcast. I'll also be telling you about an odd dream that I had recently. Also coming up, we were talking last week about penguin beating. This week, it's breast beating. I'll be attempting to communicate with a blind dignitary using his secret language. And we have a special Youngins announcement. All that and more coming up on this week's Youngins Podcast entitled, Hey, Kids, Leave That Teacher Alone. All, as ever, will be revealed over the course of the podcast, and we're lucky to get this far, to be honest. You may notice, I don't know if you have, but there may be some eagle-eared people among you saying the acoustics sound a little bit different here. The reason for that, I'm recording this in a very sparse room. It's the usual room that we record in, my bedroom in my flat in Gateshead. I'm moving to Manchester next week, so everything's kind of been taken apart. So I'm sort of moving tomorrow, so this is the last recording that will ever be done in this flat, and then I'm going to have a week off, probably won't do a podcast next week, and then a couple of weeks' time, all being well, we should be doing a podcast from Manchester. Well, how exciting that will be. I wonder how Manchester acoustics differ to Gateshead ones. Something to really look forward to there. But we're lucky to get this far in terms of the podcast because this week, I think the flat is trying to tell me something. I think this flat is trying to say, don't leave, David. Don't leave me. Because strange things have been happening. It's recording this on the Thursday, and on the Monday, the lock fell off the bathroom. Okay, maybe not sound that weird, but it just sort of fell off. It seemed to be in fairly tightly, just fell off. On Tuesday, I was sitting at the table, and then I heard this almighty crash, this massive crash, and I looked round, and a picture had fallen off the wall. It was right above the sofa, so if I'd have been sitting on the sofa, I would have been, mildly concussed at the very least. And yesterday, just before the James Fagan interview, about a minute before we came on, what I do is I have to have relatively good acoustics, because it's quite a reverberant room. I have a mattress at one side of the room, I have my bed propped up at the other side of the room, and I have quilts all around that. And then above the mattress and the bed, I've created a roof with a camp bed. And then I've got blankets hanging down. And that's been fine. No problems in that department for 2 years. I've used that system. And yesterday, it all collapsed. I was in the middle. I was just about to ring James, and it all collapsed. But fortunately, because I was reaching to get the phone, I wasn't there. But if I was there, my goodness, that would have hit me on the head as well. And that would have collapsed from quite a big height. So I'm not sure what's going on. The flat is conspiring against me. Anyway, this is a clip from the Fylde Folk Festival last week.
Very quickly before we go, I have to say, I was told by someone, he says, make sure, David, you say hello to the mayor. I said, all right, any particular reason? He says, because the mayor, like you, David, is blind. I said, oh, right, okay, so I don't know why necessarily that means that I've got to say hello to him, but that's the weird thing with blindness, because as soon as there's two, you can sense it, as soon as there's like two blind people within about 10 metres or 50, 100 metres away or whatever, you can sense the room, the temperature and the atmosphere in the room changes, and it's like, there's two blind people, do they know each other? Should we point it out? Because obviously they can't see each other. Oh, my goodness, what? But imagine if they meet. I mean, imagine if they meet and 2 meters wide. Oh my goodness! So,
by the way,
I will say hello to them. You can say that later if you want. Say it behind. Say it off stage, Michael. It's normally better to be honest, and then I can tell you how it was.
I don't think he's been there any longer. I think he's just resigned.
All right. Well, bloody hell, Michael, go on then. I was just going to say
that
Davey at our Hartlepool Folk Festival, one of the lures of coming to our Hartlepool Folk Festival, is Dave's going to do a blind person's workshop. So if you're interested in
what's that going to consist of?
Well, I don't know. What's it going to
consist of? Well, brilliant. That was a good joke, Michael. Excellent. I'm going to stop for that. Bloody hell. Sorry, Boo, you can't come on because Michael's going to do 15 minutes of jokes.
Dear.
So I will say hello to the mayor, or what I should do is do the blind, a special blind call, and if he understands it, he will know the answer, which is... I don't hear it, I don't hear it. I think he's got some residual vision. Nah, he doesn't understand this.
Anyway.
Right. The blind mayor might not have been able to understand my blind language, but a language that is universal, it is said, is music. And that is what we're going to hear right now, my friend. That's right, that's a link for you. That's a link, come on, BBC. I'm moving to Manchester. You know, you're in Salford, for goodness sake. We're not too far away from each other now. Let's talk. But not before I have talked to James Fagan, which I shall do in a matter of minutes. After we've heard, that's another link, thank you very much. After we've heard Melrose Quartet, and this is a Nancy Kerr creation, Santa Georgia.
Well, I was not bound for Eden, and my bag became a burden. So here I made my garden where the banks of burdocks grow. And there was no gold or silver where the foundry meets the river. In the land of Santa Georgia where the banks of burdocks grow. Where all pains are broken and a thousand songs are spoken. And new saints awaken where the banks of burdocks grow. So farewell cold winter, we will all shine out together. In the land of Santa Georgia where the banks of burdocks grow. Well, there is no power or plenty in the land of old Briganti, but the rain falls down so gently where the banks of burdocks grow. And a kind love of sweetness is a lantern in the darkness, is a grand and burning furnace where the banks of burdocks grow. Where all pains are broken and a thousand tongues are spoken, and new saints awaken where the banks of burdocks grow. So farewell cold winter, we will all shine out together. In the land of Santa Georgia where the banks of burdocks grow. Well, the king, he sent his army from the land of old Briganti, and the soldiers, they were weary where the banks of burdocks grow. So they stormed the temple quarter and the glass fell down like water in the land of Santa Georgia where the banks of burdocks grow. Now old pains are broken and a thousand tongues are spoken, and new saints are awaken where the banks of burdocks grow. So farewell cold winter, we will all shine out together. In the land of Santa Georgia where the banks of burdocks grow. On the road to old Briganta, where the factory meets the meadow, there's a lantern in my window where the banks of burdocks grow. And a thousand trees are planted in the land of old Briganti, in the land of Santa Georgia where the banks of burdocks grow. Where all pains are broken and a thousand tongues are spoken, and new saints are awaken where the banks of burdocks grow. So farewell cold winter, we will all shine out together. in the land of Santa Georgia, where the banks of Burdocks grow, where all pains are broken and a thousand tongues are spoken, and new saints awaken, where the banks of Burdocks grow. Farewell, cold winter, we will all shine out together in the land of Santa Georgia, where the banks of Burdocks grow.
My goodness, James, you've suddenly got something to be proud of. I don't know how many lives, sort of wounds and that kind of thing you healed when you worked as a doctor, but now you've obviously transferred from being a doctor to music, and it's a slightly tortured metaphor. You're now healing, James. You're healing wounds and scars of the soul now, I think, with your music. So it's not a complete departure from being a doctor.
I like to think so, Dave. I like to think so.
Excellent. I hope you enjoyed that tortured metaphor there. Listeners can expect more tortured metaphors over the course of the podcast.
Excellent. I wouldn't be in folk music if I didn't love a genuinely tortured metaphor.
I suppose that's a good point. What about when I did had to do a voiceover before? It was like a medical thing that I had to do, and I had to say the word. I think it was contusions. Now, is that right? What's a contusion?
A contusion is a very elaborate word for a bruise.
Right. Okay.
Nothing more, nothing less. The idea of medicine, Dave, is to baffle you into spending a lot of money using words like contusion, when you could use the word bruise.
Right.
And it took me 6 years to learn those words. I'm glad you reminded me of just how many words I know that could be used to baffle the patient.
Well, I think that's a good, very good point. Well, I think we're doing something similar with the podcast. You know, we've got a whole Young'un's Enterprise going, and people think, oh, that's nice that they give something for free. But essentially, with the tortured metaphors and that kind of thing, and there's a lot of subliminal messages within this that essentially are just to get people to buy things. So it's
excellent.
Well and truly capitalism alive and flourishing.
I'm delighted to assist you in any means possible, sir.
Excellent. Well, let's rip the public off together, my friend. Let's try and sell them your new album, or at least the Melrose Quartet album, 50 Verses. We've just heard Santa Georgia, which is one of Nancy's creations. So
yeah, she wrote that. She wrote that about living in inner city Sheffield, and how she actually really likes it, despite the fact that initially it perhaps was merely an economic move, but it became far more than that. And I think that that song, you know, really captures her emotional connection to this place, even after just a few years. And I think we're in Sheffield for the long haul, you know?
Well, Sheffield is certainly a haven of folk music, isn't it? We've got our good friend, obviously you've got Jess and Richard Arrowsmith, who you're in the group Melrose Quartet with.
We are.
We've got, you know, Gavin Davenport's, John Borden's there, and obviously Faye Heald. You've got them all. And of course, Andy Bell, producer to all the folk artists, great and good.
Andy is on rare form. The first time we heard Andy... Andy Bell, yeah. The first time we worked with Andy Bell was when Don Spies and John Bowden recorded their 10-year anniversary CD, and they asked us to come in and do a couple of tracks with them, and Andy Bell was the producer and the engineer, and we'd never met Andy before. And I said to Nancy, after 5 minutes of working with Andy Bell, I want to work with him again. And I can't imagine working with anyone else right now. He is so sympathetic to what we are doing, and at the same time, he's got enough knowledge to tell you when to shut up and when to do what you need to do. He's got it. And Hudson, his dog, I don't know.
Is he a producer as well?
Those guys are like psychically connected. You know that 50 Verses was recorded with Hudson sitting in the live room, and he never made a peep.
Wow. Maybe he oversees things. It's like a directorial. Does he consult his dog at all? Do you see him kind of with wistful glances towards the dog? Yeah, that was a good take. Thank you.
There's no doubt in my mind that Andy has some kind of supernatural connection with Hudson, and that they definitely work together.
We're going to discover, unfortunately for Andy, that we found his Achilles heel is essentially the loss of his dog. If anything happens to that dog, he's going to lose all of his producing powers. Let's just hope that he doesn't do that in September, because we're going to record our album with Andy as well. So,
As long as Hudson can hang on until after the Young'uns album, everything's all right.
All will be absolutely fine. Now, we've talked about Sheffield, and we've talked about your move to Sheffield, where Richard and Jess are, who you're in the group with. And apparently the name Melrose Quartet derives from where the four of you actually live, Melrose Road in Sheffield. I think this is amazing. I can't believe you put this on your website, actually saying the road where you live in Sheffield. You're just inviting stalkers, basically.
Not really, because we don't tell them which house. So, and there's plenty of houses on the street, and I'm not about to tell you what number we live at now. But I mean, a stalker would actually have to do some pretty serious investigation to
find
out.
That could be a Young'uns podcast feature if anyone is up for that challenge. We'll arm you with a dictaphone and you can, scale some drain pipes and that kind of thing, and we'll see what we can achieve.
I just want to point out to any potential stalker that one of the reasons we chose our house is it has an excellent sniper position in the loft. So just be very careful.
So you got there before the Olympics. You're thinking, I don't know what the fuss is all about. I've had a sniper in my house for absolutely ages. You've got to have these things when you're a high-profile folk musician.
That's right. You wouldn't be amazed. You know full well. But a lot of people out there in podcast land would be amazed at the level of personal security and armament that is involved in just protecting folk singers from the public.
We're dispelling a lot of myths here, the things that people wouldn't know. You live, I think, is that right, about three doors down from Jess and Richard?
Normally I'd reveal that, but in view of what we've just been talking about, I can't give the exact number of houses, but it's between three and four.
Right. Okay. So had you already decided when you'd moved that you were going to join forces and be a group, or was that just something that sort of just happened over time?
What we knew is that we got on like a house on fire with Richard and Jess.
Which could be quite dangerous considering where you live.
Exactly.
One house could set the other house ablaze, for goodness sake.
Well, that's right. But we decided, we lived on a boat, a narrow boat, for 11 years. When our first son, Hamish, was born in 2010, we decided that we couldn't do the boat thing anymore. We had too much stuff to fit into a 65-foot by 7-foot metal tube floating on a sea of ice, and we decided that it was time to live in a house. And Richard and Jess were one of our safe houses in Sheffield. When we used to come past here, which we did a lot because we lived in Bath, we decided that we wanted to live in Sheffield. And Richard and Jess said, well, you know what? There's a really good house on offer in our street at an unspecified number, somewhere between three and four houses down from us. And we said, you know what? That's excellent. And it's our first house, and I think we're going to be here for quite a while because we really like it. Now, as to the Melrose Quartet, we sort of soon discovered, living fairly close to Richard and Jess, after a couple of nights sitting around the various dinner tables, eating various pies with various fillings and singing various songs, that there was various levels of chemistry happening that we would like to pursue. We did our first gig at the end of 2010 at Topsham Folk Club, and it was a success. And in fact, John Shorter from Cheltenham Festival was sitting in the audience. He booked us on the spot for Cheltenham Festival 2011, and our second gig was Cheltenham Festival, and we recorded that gig, and that became our first EP. You know, that was our second gig. So things were happening very, very quickly.
Well, you're right. And you obviously just have a very natural chemistry then in that case, if this is the second gig and it forms the basis of an EP.
Exactly. I mean, that sort of proves the point, doesn't it? That concert was our second performance, public performance, and it is now like an EP which we sell quite a lot of, and people seem to like it. And it's we love it, and it is a natural thing because, as you know yourselves, you either click with other harmony singers or you don't, and you can work at it, you can rehearse it, but if you don't have a natural affinity with the people you're singing with and a natural blend, then it's hard work. And it just seemed to work with those two people and with our voices, and there's something, it's very exciting.
What about the actual choice of songs then?
Well, the first album came together really quickly, actually, because I think we all wanted this project without even knowing it for quite a long time. We all had ideas that we hadn't necessarily had a vehicle to express yet. So when we decided to form the quartet, everyone sort of had stuff that had been kind of brewing for ages. A couple of Jess songs which she'd written but hadn't got her band to sing yet. Nancy composes pretty quickly, so she wrote stuff with the quartet in mind. Richard had a song that he sings regularly in the session but had never had the exact band to record it with. I had some tunes that I'd composed and a couple of songs.
Let's hear one of those tunes now. We return to James Fagan for part two of his interview very shortly. Before that, we're going to have various clips from gigs, and we're going to be talking about dreams as well. A James Fagan dream and my dream still to come. This is Melrose Quartet. are. I can't believe. I didn't notice that before. There you are. You can hear it there. Andy Bell's dog, ladies and gentlemen, the producer. Can't believe I didn't notice that before. Anyway, fact fans, here's a little fact for you. That was track 9 from the Melrose Quartet album 50 Verses. It's entitled Polkas. Song for Margaret Fagan's 50th birthday. I've no idea who Margaret Fagan possibly could be. I wonder if she's one of Nancy's relations. Oh, bit of comedy there. And the other tune, well, actually, we didn't hear all of those. We probably just heard the last tune in that set, which was called Cheese Fairy. I just played the last couple of minutes, so that was the last tune, and that's Cheese Fairy. I'm not sure who the Cheese Fairy is, but we should have asked. These are the questions we'll have to ask next time. Who is the Cheese Fairy? Or maybe that's a concept album for the future. I think we can expect a mystical folk album about the Cheese Fairy. That's the next album from Melrose Quartet. To Whitby we go now, to Whitby Folk Week, and we did a late night performance at about 1:30 in the morning we came on, and it was quite odd because we were just performing to a lot of kind of comatose people who'd obviously been drinking all the time, and these were the late night revelers, but unfortunately in no real position to revel, so it was quite an odd atmosphere. It was a really big room that we're performing in, and our voices were just booming around and echoing around, and apparently half the audience right where the bar was couldn't understand a word we were saying, so they just thought, well, goodness knows what they thought. They thought they could see the audience at the front laughing, but they had no idea why we were laughing. See if you can work out why the audience were laughing. See if you can find a fragment of comedy in the next couple of minutes of audio from Whitby Folk Week.
You know, there was a workshop today about being nervous on stage, Dave.
Was that?
Yeah.
It's I should have gone for that.
Building confidence in front of the microphone. I thought you might have went.
Oh. Thought you might have went. My goodness. You need a grammar workshop for you, Mr. Junior. Thank you. Oh, I'm like a northern Stephen Fry. Stephen Deep Fry, perhaps.
Incidentally, that wasn't the sound of one man clapping that joke. It was two.
All right.
There was two one-armed men sitting next to each other. So.
Oh, right. Well, there we go. And that's brilliant. As opposed to the woman who couldn't. There's a woman. We were in a session, and there was a woman who couldn't clap, and so she decided to do a very strange thing where she got hold of her left breast and just started going across her chest. It was very good. It was excellent. We thought of, like, it was such good percussion. We thought we'd have her in the group, to be honest.
There's a workshop at next year's festival.
Yeah, a breast beating workshop.
But we've already got one set in the group.
I thought we were going easy on Michael today.
Come on, right.
Oh, apologies for that, Michael.
It is 1:30.
It's nearly bedtime, don't worry. Yeah. Thank you, man. Have we got time for one more, Dave? Excellent. The bar appears to be closed. Sorry about that. Thanks ever so much for coming out to see us so late.
It's good to see people do stop up at Whitby, because we got into trouble on Tuesday. I don't know if anyone's in the audience. But on Tuesday night, at about 10 o'clock, I don't know if anyone knows Graham Knights, but Graham Knights decided it was a brilliant idea to all leave the pub and do a sing-around in the street. So we started doing a sing-around, but it must have been where people, festival revelers, were staying. But very much daytime revelers, because we started singing, and it was a very polite and English thing, because this lady opened up her window and said, "Excuse me, you are brilliant, and we enjoy very much what you do, but would you mind... Would you mind buggering off and being brilliant somewhere else?"
It's the sound of Supertramp, which beckons forth our regular podcast feature...
Dreamer!
Dreamer!
Today you are a dreamer.
I am a dreamer, my friends.
Can you put your hands in your head? Oh, no.
No, I can't do that.
I said dreamer.
You did say dreamer. I said dreamer, too.
Nothing but a dreamer.
I'm nothing but a dreamer.
Can you put your hands in your head? Oh, no.
Again, no, I can't. We've already had... That's posited, and I've already explained that I couldn't do that. You know you had it coming to you, listeners. Again, I warned you at the start of the podcast we'd be doing this. Dreamer! Stupid little dreamer, how dare you? I think the audience are probably putting their head in their hands wondering how long this random bit is going to go on for. No longer, my friends, no longer. I said no longer. That's right. Oh, no. No longer. Don't worry. We're going to head to Otley now to hear about this rather odd dream that I had recently.
I had the weirdest folk-related dream last night. I was on death row. They asked for one, and they said one final request. They said, what was your one final request? And I said, I'd love to do one final gig. Because I've been on death row, but I'd love to do one final gig. So I got on stage, and then I thought, I really can't. This is going to be it. Once I've finished, I'm going to be dead after this. And the audience were in on this as well. And I said, look, if you all say encore and keep asking for encores, then I can never die. And so it was this weird thing where they kept saying encore, but then the audience started thinking, oh, I want to get home now. Eventually, I was executed.
More dream talk to come with James Fagan, who we rejoin now for part two of our interview. We've recently gone professional, despite all of the naysayers, who are probably very right, to be honest. But I'm interested about your progression from being a doctor into music. So how did that happen? Was that, because it doesn't seem like the most logical career path. Were you inspired by other people, other practitioners who diversified? I'm thinking, Dr. Hook, for instance. Of course, Dr. Dre, Was this the inspiration?
Dr. Hook, I mean, I'd like to say he was my main inspiration.
But it was more Dr. Dre.
Yeah. What happened, Dave, was that music and medicine always happened together. I was always a musician through school and through university. And at the end of university, I'd been studying my bum off for so long, I just needed a break. And I already knew what I wanted to do. And that was to get my bouzouki and my passport and come to England and connect with some of the people I'd met through the Australian folk scene who'd been on tour over in Australia, people like Roy Bailey, Martin Carthy, Norman Waterson and Eliza Carthy. These are people I'd met and sung with in Australia and found, I couldn't believe, and as an Australian, who'd listened to their music since I was a child, that they had made the effort to fly all the way to Australia, that they had made the effort to engage and learn from and teach singers on the other side of the world, and that they all were so generous as to say to me, when you come over, just look us up, drop in, say hello. And that's what happened. I went over to Robin Hood's Bay to meet up with Eliza and Norma and Martin, and I had a lovely time there. I met the late, great Lowell Waterson and Mike, and had a few songs over a Christmas dinner. And at about the same time, I met Nancy, who was living with Eliza at the time and was also in a duo with her, as you know. Mm-hmm. At that point, I had no intention whatsoever of giving up medicine. I'd only done my degree. Nancy and I actually fell in love. I mean, let's put it out there on the blog. We fell in love in the winter of 1995, and that's a while ago.
Hedonistic times, though, weren't there? Winter of 1995. I mean, I was only 10, but I could feel something in the air.
But something was in the air. There was a lot of ice in the air. It was a very cold winter. Mm. The sea off the coast of Whitby was actually frozen that year.
Wow.
That's how chilly the start to our relationship.
So that's a bit of a come down from Australia, isn't it? My goodness, what a wake-up call there.
Well, the grass is always greener, and if you grow up surrounded by fresh fruit, very healthy, tall people and a beautiful beach, what you want is to come straight into a fishing village in the freezing winter and just see how good that can be. And I'm not actually taking the piss. Hmm. I think that wherever you go, there's something to be relished about the place you go. I was actually only planning to come over for a short holiday. I had no idea it would change my life the way it did, and it turned my life upside down because I just thought Nancy was incredible. I thought she was the bee's knees, and I thought that her singing was amazing. It was quite flattering that she seemed to tolerate my company, and we took it from there. We had a long-distance relationship in 96, and then in 97, while I was doing my internship, which is my first year of professional medicine as a doctor, I didn't make too many mistakes, and I got through it okay. I was pretty tired, and I was pretty anxious, but I got through it. But at the same time, Nancy and I had already started doing gigs. But that's at the point when I decided that I was going to come over in 97 and give it a go. And in 97, we came over and we got signed by Fellside Records to make a duo album. And we got a lot of gigs that first year And then I realised that I actually probably wanted to do that a fair bit more than I wanted to go back to the public hospitals and be a doctor. So I thought, okay, what I'll do is I'll do a bit of each. And between 97 and 99, 2000, I dabbled in medicine and I gave music my best shot. And medicine just got, it wasn't a sudden decision. I just gradually stopped taking jobs.
No, thank goodness it wasn't a sudden decision. That could have been quite good. You know, there's this bleeding woman or something like that. Sorry, I can't I can't do it. I've just made the decision. I'm going to take up your bazooki.
Decision. I'm out of here.
Put down the step. Put down the stethoscope and pick up the bazooki. Well, it sounds like something from a dream, doesn't it? It sounds like, you know, it's all sort of worked out perfectly. I'm sure, like, in life, there are many things that, you know, happened along the way and that kind of thing. And when you just explain it like that, it does sound very perfect.
Well, I've left out bits that I, you know, to protect various parties involved. I've left out some of the source, some of the gossip, and I've left out some of the financial pressure that it's put upon me as a person.
That's for the book, I think, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. I mentioned dreams, and I did that primarily to neatly segue between one item and the next. Before we play 50 Verses, which I think is probably a fitting song, given it's the title track of the album, but feel free to change that. We talk a lot about dreams on the podcast, because obviously, I don't know if you have this, but we have... Oh, is that a debut from...
That was Hamish in the Hamish. Background. He's asking He's actually asking me if I can open his younger brother's birthday present and put it on the DVD player for him.
Ah, and, what's the DVD?
The DVD's called Harry and the Bucket Full of Dinosaurs.
Okay. Is this going to inspire a new song or a concept album or something?
I don't know. I think is Hamish might have to live with the fact that he might have to wait till Harry, the actual recipient of the present, is out of the bath before he gets to enjoy his younger brother's birthday present.
Do you have folk-related dreams? Because we have folk-related dreams where, like, about gigs that go disastrously wrong or that kind of thing. So we've been talking about dreams quite a lot. Is there a specific folk-related dream or even a non-folk-related dream, just a dream that stood out that you would like to share with us?
Yes, I do. Hmm. I would like to tell you how when I was a very studious student, which I was, I used to have this quite remarkable dream, and it happened a lot. And it happened all through school. It happened all through medicine. And then the day that I gave away medicine, not a word of a lie, and started making music my living, I stopped having this particular dream. The dream was that I was in a dark forest, and there was this crazy competition going on between myself and a number of other boys of a similar age, where we had to build in the dark this structure from the material that we found around us. And it was a race, and it was very pressured. And I was scrabbling around in the dirt, finding sticks, trying to build this tower that I had to build to fulfill the criteria. And every time there was a guy next to me who had gold ingots, which he'd managed to find in the woods, and was just looking at me with this look on his face, like, there's my tower. And in this dream, and I always used to wake up in a kind of a panicked sweat, that there was nothing I could do about it, there was nothing I could do to make my stick tower win this competition. And you know what? I have no idea what that dream means, but I know is that I've never...
If it disappeared, I think Hamish is trying to interpret the dream. I think what that could mean is it means you feel as if you're in the wrong thing. You know, as soon as you start doing what you really wanted to do, that left, you know, that tower, you now have the best tower. You now have that golden opportunity. Maybe that's what it could mean.
Well, I like to think that I still have my wooden tower, but that I don't see the golden tower anymore.
Right, okay. We're getting very deep. We can't.
I like my wooden tower.
No, we have got into some very interesting territory. I think there's an actual volume of where we're asking folk singers about their dreams. I think we could probably in a few weeks, a month's time, sort of release a volume. Now that's what I call Folk Singers Dreams Volume 1. That could work quite well. I think, should we play 50 Verses, or do you think there's something more apt that you would like to play? I'm picking that one simply.
I think 50 Verses has a dreamlike quality, and we could easily segue into that, Dave.
You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, that song started on the harmonium, which we got for free after I saw an ad on Facebook saying anyone who wants a harmonium, come and get it in Sheffield. And I saw it just seconds before Richard Arrowsmith. Actually, I didn't. I saw it after him, but he turned around and asked Jess if they had room for it in their house. And in the time that he did wasted asking Jess, I just said yes without even asking Nancy. And you know what happened? I then went around and asked him if I could borrow his Mondeo because it didn't fit in the back of my Passat, just to rub it in. But anyway, he was quite
happy. isn't there a story, because then another... then so you told this story at a gig. I remember where we saw you recently, and you told this story at a gig, and then someone else said, well, I've got a harmonium, and told and basically gave Richard a much better harmonium than the one that you've got.
This is absolutely accurate. Yeah. That is exactly what happened, and I'm glad that story's out there, because I got... that is karma with a capital K.
We are gay. We are so deep on this week's podcast. Oh!
So, we
are healing those contusions of the soul, my friend. That's what we're doing.
The contusions are disappearing before our eyes.
Exactly.
Now, I got that harmonium home, and the first thing I played on it was this riff that just came out of nowhere and flowed out of my fingers while I was pumping the pedals like a maniac in a gymnasium, which you have to do with a harmonium. And this music came out, and Nancy said, can I use that riff to write a song for Steve Hunt's 50th birthday? And I said, yes. And the rest is history.
Thank you very much for talking to us, James.
You're welcome, Dave. And I just want to say a big hello to a couple of people out there.
Do you want to do a shout-out? Yeah, go on then.
I want to do a shout-out.
Yeah, yeah.
To my son, Hamish, in the lounge room.
Yeah, big up
to
yourself.
To my son, Harry, in the bath.
Yeah, respect.
And to Nancy, the best muffin baker in Sheffield.
Booyah, yeah.
And to the young'uns, a very happening three-part harmony group.
Oh, thank you, Brat Brat.
From the northeast.
Yeah, there we are. We've done the shout-outs.
That's it.
Taken care of everything. And now what? I think this is the perfect song to segue out of the shout-outs. This is the kind of thing it's designed for. Thank you very much, James.
Talk to you later.
surnames in a longer living. Just 50 verses of a longer song. Just 50 surnames in a longer living. Just 50 verses of a longer song. See how the season is starting something. There's rift on a thing of a summer long. Season is starting something. The swift on a thing of a summer long. And thrifty voices do greet the dawning with 50 verses of a longer song.
50 verses. Melrose Quartet. That's the name of that track. That's the name of their album. James Fagan, Nancy Kerr, Richard and Jess Arrowsmith, a super group in the folk world. Folk stalwarts, multi-award winners. What's important is just the fact that they produce such amazing music as that. What a brilliant album. Excellent. Hopefully we'll have the Melrose Quartet on the podcast later doing some sort of live songs for us, perhaps. Right then, it's time for our final clip, which comes from Soulfest. It was a very strange festival. It was all took place outdoors. So it was an outdoor stage, and there was loads of like families with children just kind of milling around. It wasn't even a folk festival either. It was just, it just had like a folk element to it. And there were other groups on there. We had Maximo Park were playing. There was dance acts and hip-hop acts and all sorts of different music. And the stages as well were like conflicting with each other. Like you had like three different stages going on at the same time, so you could hear the other bands kind of reverberating in the distance. And it was quite an odd atmosphere. And also people were dressed up as well. Everyone nearly was dressed up, and you as just different characters and that kind of thing. We had Harry Potter, and we had Dennis the Menace, and Rapunzel as well. Rapunzel was getting a little bit stressed because her daughter kept running to the front of the stage and trying to clamber onto the stage, and she was getting a little bit stressed about that. But as I pointed out to Rapunzel, come on, love, keep your hair on. So as you can tell, it was an absolutely brilliant gig. And we're going to hear a clip from that gig right now, which will reveal why this week's Young'uns podcast is entitled, Hey, Kids, Leave That Teacher Alone. Oh, hang on. Can you hear that, listeners? It's back, it's back. It's an old friend of the podcast. That's the final time you're ever going to hear that, unless there's a similar ice cream van in Manchester, of course. So there you are. Quite an emotional moment, ladies and gentlemen. An old friend of the podcast has made many an appearance, and that's the last time we'll hear from that Gateshead ice cream van. Right then, let's get back to Soulfest.
Do you know why it's getting even more embarrassing being called the Young'uns? Because Michael used to be a teacher, and half his class is in the audience.
Hey!
Oh, you haven't been drinking?
I was going to say, it's a pair of hooligans, Michael. What were you brought up?
There you are.
Go on, ask them a question. Yeah. Key stage three question coming up for you now.
I'm so happy to see that they're listening in those citizenship lessons.
Unbelievable. Yeah, exactly.
Enjoy your pint.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Use
it! Oh
was one of his first classes. I mean, I'm going to get him to like, clap on, you bastards. Clap
on. One more.
Clap on.
Sorry to disappoint you. We've got 20 minutes, sir. We're doing a very long one. How about Bohemian Rhapsody for you?
Yeah.
And 1/15th of the ring cycle.
Yeah. All right. I need you Samari, sir.
Yeah. Well, he's asking me to teach him Samari. Those days are long gone, my friend. You enjoy your pint.
So there's nothing in the Bible about smoking,
don't worry. I'll enjoy it. You got me through my GCSEs. I'm happy with you. I got a C. I'm happy.
He just said, you got me through my GCSEs. I'm happy with you. I got a C, mate.
Yeah, only a C.
And
make sure you buy an album. Right, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, exactly.
You do realise he would have got a pay rise if it wasn't for you getting a C. Buy a C there, you know. Right.
Use it.
2, 3, 4.
Use it.
Monster.
I didn't know you sung until these told me, like. It was like a shock.
How wrong they were, my friend.
I went to Soulfest last year and told me, Hughesy killed a Soulfest. All right, really?
Listen, lads, we'll forget about the 400 people that are back there. Let's just talk to these three.
Yeah, yeah. Join your own microphone, mate.
Join it. Maybe after school classes, they were class.
Right then, what are you
imagining? Not you doing, Ben.
Everybody, thank you very much for listening to us.
You're welcome.
We've been the young'uns, so... But we feel considerably older now.
I'm 18, mate.
And if you'd like to find out more about us, we're all over the internet. We're on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff.
Is Hughesy on Facebook?
Is he on Facebook?
No,
the correct answer is no.
Are you on Twitter?
Hey, it's a great thing, Catholic education, isn't it?
Hey, so
we've got some CDs available. They're a tenner each. We've got two different ones. Thank you, everyone.
Yes, at the moment we have only got two CDs available at festivals, but very shortly we shall have three, because we're doing a new album, as we said before, in September, with the aforementioned Andy Bell. And here is a clip, before we leave, pertaining to that young'un's announcement.
We've got a new album coming out on February the 10th next year, with some songs that you've heard today. And the album launch is going to be in Durham, the old Elvis Methodist Church.
We booked the Methodist Church for our album launch. Oh, it's going to be brilliant.
So 30 seconds away from three pubs, though, sir.
So it's a fantastic venue. It's going to be a fantastic night. So what we've started doing as of last night, we've started taking bookings and reservations. We got quite a few last night.
We had a lot of reservations, didn't we? Yeah.
It's a fantastic gig. We have done it before, and Dave unwittingly mounted a pulpit.
Well, I think mounted is quite an unfortunate term.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry.
But it'll be a great night.
That was never proven in the court of law.
It's lots of... it'll be kind of 10 years on from when we started, so there's been lots of stories and things over the last 10 years.
Oh, we're going to get sentimental, are we? We're going to get nostalgic. Right. I think we managed to do that announcement. I think everyone got the salient points there, Michael.
Excellent.
The 22nd of February, Saturday, Durham in the Church.
Obviously, more information on that is available at the Young'uns website, which is Mike Harding.
TheYoungUns.co.uk.
Thank you, Mike. TheYoungUns.co.uk for all the information on the album launch, and obviously where you can download all the podcasts and that kind of thing. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, probably, once I'm settled in Manchester for the 128th Young'uns podcast. Till then, from me, David Eagle, thank you to James Fagan, thanks to you for listening. Till next time, goodbye.
This stage till 9 o'clock, and then we'll be back with the legendary home service. So don't go too far away.